Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm Chris.
I'm Rob.
Hold on. Start again. Hello, Cincinnati. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
Are you with me, Rob?
I am with you.
I'm with you, Rob. And together,
we're good for what ails you.
Tonight on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, we're going to be talking to Dr. Jocelyn Elders. Former Surgeon General, United States of America, under the Clinton administration. She's been described by Bill Clinton as not controversial. She just has a knack for throwing the corn out where the hogs can get at it. And if you want to call the new Republican Congress a whole bunch of pigs, I think you can get away with it.
Dr. Elders, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
What did Clinton mean when he said you're not controversial, you just throw the corn out where the pigs can get it?
Oh, well, I think he meant that I spoke very plainly and people understood what I said.
Well, what are you doing now since you left the government?
Oh, I'm being a professor and I'm doctoring and...
Where are you
from? University.
Oh, it's University of Arkansas?
Yes.
How about them Razorbacks?
Hey, the pigs won tonight, didn't they?
Yes.
Well, so why do you think you were canned?
Well, I think the administration felt that they needed to go in a different direction.
Do you think that perhaps the administration is a bunch of cowards cowering from the truth?
No. I feel that the American people... may not be ready for many of the things I say, but I don't think that's really true either. I think most American people are very aware that the things that I was talking about was absolutely true, and that it's been used as a political tool, and I don't think they're fooling the American people.
Do you think that you made a mistake? I mean, would you do anything different if you had to do it all over again?
No.
You do everything exactly the same.
Was it so much that President Clinton didn't agree with what you said, but he was bowing into pressure, both from the new Republican Congress and an uptight American public who couldn't handle comments on things like drug legalization and masturbation and so forth?
Well, of course, I said study the legalization of drugs. And I think that, you know, any time any of us get to where we have a major problem and we can't study it, we really have a problem.
Have there been any official type government or scientific studies on the effect of drug legalization on America today?
Not that I know about.
And you're just advocating studying it, not necessarily let's go out and legalize pot right away.
Well, you know, I think before you go out and do anything, you need to find out whether it's effective or not.
Do you think the media didn't treat you in a... positive light? Do you think that perhaps they took too many sound bites when perhaps they should have elaborated more on some of the things you said?
Well, you know, you can't blame the media. The media is out there. They're making a living, and in America, we've learned to live on sound bites, and we don't read the papers, newspapers as much. And so, you know, that's our society today.
Dr. Elders, so what's Bill Clinton really like?
Oh, I think he's a very bright, knowledgeable man who's very, very concerned about what's going on in the country, and I think he really wants to do what's right.
And firing you was right?
Hiring me was right?
Was that right?
Firing
I don't
me?
Think it was right. The things you said made a lot of sense. Even the sound bites made sense. Then if you elaborate them, they make even more sense.
Well, I think that there are a lot of... The problem is those of you who feel like you didn't say anything, whereas the other side was very vocal, they were very active, they went out and voted, and they spoke their piece, and they won.
Now, what do you think of Dr. Henry Foster, Jr.? I hear he's going to be an applicant as a replacement for your job as Surgeon General of the United States of America.
I know Dr. Henry Foster. He went to the University of Arkansas. He was 2 years ahead of me. And he was a very good friend of my husband's. He was chairman of OBGYN at Meharry and was dean there. And he's wonderful.
So you're saying he's an okay cat?
Oh, yes.
when you were making your comments at a meeting in December, when you're making your comments about masturbation, did you have any idea that that would be the, the straw that broke the camel's back and you would be asked for your resignation? Did you have any inkling of that?
No, I didn't.
So were you surprised by the controversy it created?
Of course. You know, and you were talking about 8 days later. All the media was there. All the radio was there. Everyone was there. And at the time, nobody thought anything about it.
It seemed to me that you were just an icon for everything that the right wing hated about the Clinton administration. Why do you think you were that lightning rod?
Well, I was that lightning rod before I went in. The Surgeon General's position is that kind of position. You know, when you take it, that's what you're about. It's a bully pulpit. But you have to stand up and fight for the American people to try and improve their health. And just because, there are problems, you still have to fight for what's right.
What's a typical day at the office of the Surgeon General like?
The typical day at
what's a Surgeon General do for a living? And what'd you think of C. Everett Koop's beard?
I thought it was wonderful.
Do you think he looked like a big ugly pilgrim?
I really liked Dr. Koop's beard. I thought he was a very...
Touch of class, huh?
Distinguished man.
I think he looked like he should have been wearing them shoes with the big buckles on them at Plymouth Rock.
I think he would have fit in very nicely.
Anyhow, what's a typical day at the office of the Surgeon General all about?
Oh, a typical day at the office of the Surgeon General is that you get up very early and you get on an airplane, fly across the country, and talk with different kinds of groups, sometimes two and three different groups a day. I've gone from talking in Philadelphia to going to Princeton to talking to a town hall meeting in Trenton to doing a major fundraiser that night.
Have you ever been
to
Cincinnati?
To Washington, and that's not untypical.
Have you ever been to Cincinnati?
Yes.
Do you like it here?
Yes.
Where'd you stay?
Well, I stayed on the university campus, and it's the faculty dorm up in the Cincinnati several times.
Where's your favorite place you've been since you've been everywhere?
Oh, I've never stayed any place long enough to know.
So basically a day at the office is a lot of public speaking, huh?
A day at the office is a lot of public speaking.
A lot of paperwork?
A lot of paperwork at night.
Do you think junior high and high schools should make rubbers available to their students?
I think junior high schools and high schools should make condoms available for any student who needs them.
See, that's what got you in trouble in the first place.
That's right.
And what's the big deal about that?
Well, the big deal is, given a choice, wouldn't you rather your child or you use a rubber than to get AIDS or get...
Well, let me ask you something. This is...
If you have an unplanned pregnancy.
Let me ask you something. This is real honest from me to you.
Okay.
I'm about 27 years old. I went to high school in the early 80s.
Still a virgin.
No, I'm not. But anyway, when I was in a high school, when I was 16 or 17, if you'd have given me a rubber, just to be honest with you, I wouldn't have known what to do with it. And I didn't get involved in that until maybe college. Are today's high school and middle school kids really getting into sex in a big time way that adults these days are not aware of?
Probably not as much as we adults think they are, but it only takes once.
Yep. What about, is it true that you have a vase, but instead of having flowers in it, it's got condoms?
Oh, I have a beautiful vase full of condom roses.
Condom roses.
Is that what your husband got you for Valentine's Day?
No, the company that produced them sent them to me.
Now, what are your sound bites that I have here on sex education? And this is a quote from you, supposedly. You've all had driver's education. We've taught you what to do in the front seat. Now we have to teach you what to do in the back seat. My question to you is, haven't the kids already figured it out? I mean, when I was in high school, it took me a while. I figured it out. I knew how to jack off by the time I was 14.
Well, I think that nobody, first of all, let me say this. Nobody has ever needed to teach anybody how to have sex. God taught us that. What we need to do is begin to teach young people responsibility and make responsible decisions. We all want them to be abstinent, but if they're not abstinent, we certainly want them to be responsible. And that's what this is about, is teaching young people to make responsible decisions rather than running around trying to legislate morals. Nobody needs to teach anybody that I've ever known a how-to course.
Since masturbation is just a normal, natural part of life, why do you feel that was such a touchy subject? I mean, you obviously didn't think it was. I mean, why do you think other people totally lost it over that?
Well, you know, I think that our society really don't like to talk about certain things. And when we have come to the point that we can't honestly discuss openly normal human sexuality, well, that's why we have such a problem. You know, we have the highest teenage pregnancy rate in the industrialized world. AIDS is rising most rapidly in our teenagers of any other country, industrialized country, not the African countries are really very, very high, but we are moving fast toward that of a third world country. And then the fact that we still will not talk about it. We would rather sacrifice our children rather than educate them about sex. That says something about our thinking and our society.
Doc, you haven't said anything to me that would make me fire you if I was in charge. Some of the things you say to me tonight sound like just basic common sense. I would think everybody would feel that
way. Pretty middle of the road.
Well, I think most American people, especially those with children, feel that it's pretty middle of the road. But then when you decide that you want to politicize public health, politicize what we need to do to make a difference for what's happening in our society, to reduce the death from AIDS, to reduce the cost of health care, well then, you know, if you want to politicize something, you can take any position you want.
I have a whole list of sound bites, which I do not think are a good way for the media to portray any idea, but I'd like to run some of these sound bites by you so that you could elaborate on them.
All right.
Is that all right with you? Maybe take
sure.
A couple of minutes, no more than that on some of these. For example, on crime prevention, you say, we could send someone to Harvard for far less a year than we could send them to Arkansas State Prison.
That's right.
Elaborate on that a little
well,
bit.
Well, what I mean by that, the average cost of building one prison cell now is over $50,000 per single bed or single unit. And the average cost of putting people in prison is $35,000 a year. We have gone from 300,000 prisoners to over 1 million prisoners overall. So I'm saying that we don't mind paying the average of $35,000 a year to warehouse young people in prison, and we do not want to pay $3,000 a year for early childhood education to give them a good start in school.
Could we surmise that if these figures are true in Arkansas, they may be similar in many other states across the country?
Well, the average cost of prison is $35,000 a year.
Not just in Arkansas, but everywhere?
That's the average. In states like California, it's up to $90,000 a year. And in Arkansas, it's only $20-some thousand a year.
Well, you're probably not the only individual aware of these facts, figures, and monies. Does anybody else know about this, and is anybody else trying to do something
about
it?
Absolutely. The fastest growing growth industry in the United States today is prisons. We've built more prisons in the past 10 years than we've built schools.
Why?
Well, because we're warehousing prisoners.
Why?
Most of them are drug-related.
We have no reason to do that.
Well, you know, I think that we need to invest in preventing these problems. We can't keep warehousing people. We've got to prevent the problem. We know that treatment is far for drug problems. It's far cheaper than incarceration. We know that just incarceration does not work, and yet we continue to do that.
You said something a minute ago that'll take us into our next topic. You said many prisoners in the fast-growing prison population are there because of drug-related crimes.
60%.
Wow. How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel that we've got to, first of all, admit that our war on drugs is not working. and that we need to do something else. But then we said that we aren't going to even talk about the issue. We aren't going to even study the issue. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing, and that makes no sense to me.
One of your quotes here. When whites have a drug problem, it's treated as a health issue. When blacks do, it's treated as a criminal issue. Do you really think that this is a racial issue or more of a drug legalization and drug-related issue?
Well, I think it's probably a money issue, all right? When, you know, people who have money are more likely to be able to get lawyers and end up being sent to treatment facilities. And if you don't have a lawyer, you end up getting sent to prison.
Makes sense to me.
Drug use among blacks and whites is absolutely no different, but blacks are 14 times more likely to be incarcerated.
Now, it made a lot of headlines when your son was arrested just a couple of weeks after you made some comments in the press, some sound bites where you said things like we should look at the idea of legalizing drugs. Do you think that was a coincidence? Do you think he was set up or watched more closely after that?
Well, you know, I think that...
And how's he doing, by the way?
He's doing fine. He did have a single relapse, and he's back in a treatment facility. But my son's doing fine, and he's going to do very well. I'm very pleased. I think if he hadn't gotten into real trouble, he might be dead now. So I'm very pleased with how my son's doing.
Well, send him our love from Cincinnati.
Thanks.
But do you think that maybe the Republicans or somebody at the CIA or something? I don't know. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. But do you think there was a coincidence to that?
Well, you know, I think that there are major problems. But you know, the real problem is my son did have a drug problem, and since he did have a drug problem, he was in a position to be caught. And so, you know, now I'm glad he was. You know, I wish that I had found it earlier and gotten him into treatment, but I didn't. But I'm glad he got into treatment. I'm glad he's doing well.
When you saw yourself basically railroaded out of town by misrepresentations of your statements and your beliefs, did it depress you about the level of discourse in this country on political issues?
Well, let me say this. I have some concerns, but not related to my being railroaded out of town. You know, I feel that if the president wanted to go a different way, you know, it's like if you're running a business or you're doing your talk show. If you aren't doing it like the company or whomever wants it done, it's not going well, your ratings aren't so, well, then they need to get somebody else to handle it, all right? Well, that's the way I feel about this.
But the whole, in a country that's supposed to be the land of the free, when you bring up the whole issue of just studying the legalization of drugs, and that's totally misconstrued in the media, is like saying you want to legalize heroin tomorrow, doesn't it just kind of, you know, sadden you that you can't even have an intelligent discussion?
But listen, there is a group there's about a 30% group of people, and, you know, when you get up to 30%, you can almost control anything in this country, that are very well organized. They are marching across this country, taking over very slowly every aspect of our society. And I feel that if that's where our society wants to be, with us having no choice, with them making all the decisions for us, and we're no longer a free country, if that's the way we're going, well, we can keep sitting home and not voting. But if they get up, they work hard, they're out there every day, they go vote, they use their churches and everything else. And I feel they've done that, and if we sit and allow that to happen, we deserve what we get.
You're talking about the religious far right.
That's right.
But you know, William F. Buckley, who is a conservative, is for the legalization of drugs.
Yes.
Did you get a letter from him or anything?
Yes, I did get a note from Mr. Buckley.
Did he say go get them?
Oh, well, no. Well, but you know, I think there were several studies even since the Nixon administration. I forget the name of the studies, and they all said that that we really should look at the decriminalization of drugs, and it was highly recommended. These were major studies that was commissioned by the president, as far back as President Nixon.
Dr. Elders, can we gossip for a minute?
Sure.
You've known Bill Clinton a lot longer than the American public has. Is he really a womanizer?
I don't know about Mr. Clinton.
Has he ever made a pass at you?
Pardon?
Has he ever made a pass at you?
No.
Good thing.
Never made a pass at me.
If he did, you'd probably slap him silly, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I doubt if the president would make a pass at me. I don't think he's that, you know, I don't think that I'm the age of women that he'd be making passes.
He likes them young, fertile kind, doesn't he?
Well, I don't know what kind he likes. I think he has a very attractive wife, and I think that he chose well. And she's
what do you think of Hillary's hair?
What, pardon?
What do you think of Hillary's hairdos?
Well, I really like some of them.
She gets a new one every week.
Well, I some of them are absolutely beautiful.
Which ones are your favorite ones?
Well, I like her kind of shorter when pulled back that she was wearing about a year ago.
Oh, you know, she had the, like the headband thing in.
Oh, well, she used to wear the headband a lot here.
She looks a lot better without glasses, I think.
Oh, no, I think she's a very beautiful lady. I think she's gotten more beautiful as she's grown older.
Do you think Bill Clinton really inhaled?
Well, I don't know.
But you never did a toke with Bill, I take it, huh?
No, you know, I've never, I know I sound, you know, out of touch. But do you know, I've never seen or smoked or anything, not even a marijuana cigarette.
You advocate legalizing drugs, maybe, but you've never smoked pot?
No.
Done any other drugs?
No.
What did you think when the Republicans said that 25% of the White House has used drugs in the last 5 years?
I think that is typical of some of the things that they have, you know, that just been thrown out without no data, no facts, nothing to back them up. I think that's very irresponsible.
Well, who really cares if they do or not?
You're absolutely right.
I guess you got to hope that the guy running your Amtrak train isn't high. Okay. But outside of that, maybe it would help Bill Clinton to get high sometimes.
Well, you know, I'm not even saying anything about that. But I just think what I really want is good, responsible political leaders. And, you know, and I have questions sometimes. You know, I'm not concerned about what they do in their bedrooms. I'm not concerned about what they do at other places. I'm concerned about how well they think and how concerned they are about the American public and about this country that they're supposed to be representing.
Have you and Mr. Clinton ever had any off-the-cuff comments, conversations on whether or not he thinks O.J. Simpson did it?
No.
You know, that's what the American people really want to know.
Well,
and you know, that's kind of a reflection, too, on some of the things we're talking about the American public's ignorance and apathy towards some of the topics we're discussing tonight.
Well, and
it seems
some
like
of the things that are truly affecting their lives, their children, and the future of
this
country.
And O.J.'s not that.
No, no.
Is Ron Brown a crook?
I don't really know Mr. Brown very well, but I never thought of him as a crook.
What about any of those other guys? Are any of those other guys shady?
What are the guys?
Oh, the whole cabinet.
You're being pretty broad there, Ron.
Let's not talk about the whole cabinet. If we're going to talk about the cabinet, let's include the whole Washington scene.
Okay, who's the crookest guy in Washington? Who's the biggest crook in Washington, D.C.?
I have no idea.
Who's the biggest crook you know in Washington, D.C.? See, we're all out here in flyover country, and we're all just, you know, in awe of everything that happens inside the Beltway.
I was flying around, running out there to visit everybody, and I wasn't in Washington, D.C. that much. I just slept there at night sometimes.
Is it a nice town?
Oh, I loved it. I lived out at Bethesda, and a wonderful home for the Surgeon General, so I really enjoyed it.
Where's the best breakfast in D.C.?
At my house.
At your house. Well, too bad you don't live there anymore. We'll have to come to Arkansas to get a good breakfast.
That's
in.
Right.
As Surgeon General, did you ever tell Bill Clinton to quit going to McDonald's every day? It's not good for him?
No.
Well, somebody needs to tell him that.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Well, look, Dr. Elders, we're going to let you go back to bed or do whatever you do overnight in Arkansas, and I don't think we need to know that.
All right.
So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
The phone lines are open. We're going to have another guest on here in a little while in case you are wondering why the phone lines are busy. 749-1444, the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Doctor, my eyes. Couldn't have a talk show without a little Jackson Browne, could we? Hello, Cincinnati. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together,
we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
What's the phone number, Rob?
749-1444.
And what's the call letters?
WAIF, Cincinnati, okay. What radio is meant to be.
What's the heaviest book you've ever seen? I mean, the biggest, thickest, most heaviest, biggest book you've ever seen.
It's a book I wrote called Chicks That Dig Me.
What's the second biggest book you've ever seen?
Alternative Medicine, The Definitive Guide, compiled by the Burton Goldberg Group.
Well, do we have Burton Goldberg on the phone?
I don't know. Do we have Burton Goldberg on the phone?
Here I is.
Yes, we sure do.
What's the biggest book you've ever seen?
Besides the Holy Bible.
Well, the Bible's not that big.
Well,
unless you print it real big letters.
Well, they can print it on an onion paper and it's really small.
Yeah. But they usually get smoked if you do that.
They used to use vellum years ago.
Wow.
It was a big book. But my book is 1,100 pages.
Wow.
It is about 5 pounds. And it's written by my staff from the information of 380 of the world's leading alternative physicians.
Okay, let's stop right here and tell everyone they should get a pen and paper ready because you have a free offer for them, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the interview, you'll give out an address and people can get a newsletter?
It's a digest, a magazine.
Now, what do you mean by alternative? You said alternative medicine. What's wrong with regular everyday medicine like aspirin and stuff?
And Sucrates.
Hey, if you have a headache, you're not deficient in aspirin. And yet the aspirin will take away your headache sometimes.
Mm-hmm. We hope.
Well, the alternative doctor, rather than masking the symptom, will find out what caused that headache in the first place.
Ooh.
And then give you some treatment or help and guidance, and your body will help itself.
You know, for me, whenever I get a headache, a real good cure is usually a big, tall, cold beer and a big, greasy cheeseburger. I'm not kidding.
Now that's alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could very well be.
Well, at this time of year, especially here in southwestern Ohio, everyone wants to know what they can do to relieve cold and flu symptoms. Do you have any advice? You don't want to give away the whole book, but, you know, just a few.
Listen, we do this book on a spiritual basis, and we want to help people. And the purpose of the book is to take away your pain and your illness. But cold and flu is something we cover very, very carefully. Gary Gordon, an M.D., from Tempe, Arizona, has a natural antibiotic. And there's a sidebar there, and we tell you vitamin C, vitamin A, and garlic. And I use chiolic.
You mean like, could I make up a batch of garlic bread with like some cheese on it or something?
No.
Or I actually got to eat a clove, huh?
No. The clove isn't going to do it. You've got to have concentrated, organic concentrated, where you're taking 10 capsules 3 times a day.
I think Larry King advertised that stuff, doesn't he?
Garlic,
yeah.
He has a different brand, but that's, the, you know, many of them are very good.
That kind
of
stuff?
Garlic is a natural antibiotic, as is honey, as is ginger. You know, there's many roads that lead to healing. And the book is about options. And so in cold and flu, listen, gentlemen, if you have something coming on, and if you do this process to the T, you can abort that cold quite often, and if you get behind the curve, which is about 6 hours, if you do it within the first 6 hours of feeling lousy, you can reverse that symptom and that cold. I've seen it. I've done it. My staff does it.
Do you have a chapter in your book on hangovers?
I do. I think we do.
Do you? Look up hangovers. We got the book here. Look up hangovers, Rob.
We'll see what a hangover is.
Rob's going to look up. Is there like a medical term for hangover?
No. If we would have it under
Like, what's hangover in Latin?
Oh, God. You guys are that big of boozers?
No, but our audience is.
Hangover, 926.
Oh, cool. There it is. Okay, so, Burton, what's the cure for a hangover?
Don't drink a lot of alcohol.
Oh, my God. Do we have hangover in the book?
Yeah,
yes, it's here.
Page 926.
You don't even know what's in your book, buddy.
Well, I told you it was in it, but 926, I had to find it in the index.
Headlights is in there, too.
I can't remember every page.
There's some gnarly stuff in here.
Well,
look, heavy metal toxicity.
Let's talk about hangovers.
Too much Judas Priest.
Okay, we're going to talk about hangovers for
926. Well, we talk about self-care, acupressure, and...
What's acupressure?
Well, it's like acupuncture, but you hold these points, and we have charts in this book that show you the points to hold. For instance, in headaches, we have about 6 points that you can hold, and quite often take care of headaches. I had a very interesting thing happen on headaches the other day. I was in Philadelphia doing a show, and this 26-year-old young lady said that she's had migraines all her life, since 9, and no one's been able to take it away. She opened the book. She went to Robert Milne, an MD from Las Vegas, who said, take Alka-Seltzer Gold. Now, Alka-Seltzer Gold has the bicarb of soda.
Right.
And that neutralizes the gut. And, you know, it changes from acid to at normal pH. And she said, for the first time in my life, my migraines disappeared. No one's ever done this. So that's the kind of joy you get, you know.
So when you're talking about alternative medicines, you're not meaning necessarily alternative to over-the-counter drugs and prescription drugs.
No, basically, it is alternative to mainstream medicine. You know, when it comes to the emergency room, you can't beat mainstream medicine. It's the best.
So like if you break a leg, go get a cast.
You break a leg, you have an accident, they sew you up, stop the bleeding, take away your pain. Heroic surgeries, unbelievably great. It's the best in the world. But gentlemen, when it comes to degenerative disease, they're failures.
It's like, what do you mean degenerative?
Cancer.
Okay, how do you treat cancer?
Arthritis, chronic fatigue, headaches, back pain. Alternative medicine has some of the answers. How do you treat cancer? Now, let me tell you a story about Stacy Milgram. Stacy's a 36-year-old mother of a 4-year-old boy. Lives in Boston, and 3 cancer doctors, oncologists, told her to have her left breast removed.
Ooh. Ouch!
And then they couldn't guarantee, even with chemotherapy, that she would survive. She called me in February after reading the book. We have 33 pages on cancer.
Starts on page 556.
Yeah, and we tell you what causes it. We give you the proof. Mainstream medicine, oncologists, have known what causes cancer since 1968, and they don't tell you, they ignore it, and all they do is to poison you, radiate you, and do surgery on you. They don't go to the root cause, and it's known. And we, in this book, give you the proof in their own journals. We tell you the studies in their own journals that they ignore. In addition, Hildegard Zaccarella, a toxicologist in Florida, went to a naval hospital. The naval surgeon removed the prostate of a sailor.
Ouch.
They cut it in half. Half went to pathology. The other half to toxicology. It was cancerous. And you know what was in that tumor? Chlorodane, arsenic, and DDT.
Basically poisons, man-made poisons.
That's exact. You know, gentlemen, there was hardly any cancer at the turn of the century. Hardly.
Really?
We've had it since biblical days. There was hardly any heart disease. But that's another story.
What did people die of back in the old days then?
In 1876, I studied Scientific America, a journal that's still on the newsstand.
Uh-huh.
The city was New York. The month was October. 43% of the deaths were children under the age of 5. 46% were respiratory, tuberculosis, pneumonia, bronchial conditions, and so forth. There was hardly any cancer. As a matter of fact, I couldn't find a case of it. And, you know, they diagnosed cancer. It was rare. And heart disease, there was genetic heart disease, you inherited it, but there wasn't any hardening of the arteries that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
In 1912, the British came over to study that new disease. Getting back to Stacy, this young lady, calls me in February after reading the book. We have 33 pages. I sent her to a doctor in Virginia. And incidentally, this doctor's information is in my 33 pages, but his name isn't, because at that time, they were trying to remove his license. And his patients went before the Virginia board and said, gentlemen, if you take Dr. Vincent Speckhart's license, we are going to personally sue you for the death of our loved one. And they didn't take it. Dr. Speckhart is a certified oncologist. He was a missionary in Africa, had 55,000 native patients, came to this country, and everybody chipped in. They sent him business, you know, the other doctors, and helped get started. But when they noticed he was practicing unconventional medicine, which means inexpensive, non-toxic, unpatentable, how dare you prove us wrong medicine, they stopped sending him stuff and they tried to take his license. As far as I'm concerned, the oncologists of America are the most stupid, greedy, immoral people in this country.
Worse than senators?
There are some senators that you know, are roadkill as well. But let me just tell you what my proof is. Stacy went to him in September, February. She called me in September of 94, last year. My cancer's gone.
Wow.
My pain in my left arm disappeared after a month. I got my energy back. I gained weight. My diet came back. I feel great. I'm moving to New York City.
Started that'll holding... kill her.
Huh?
Moving to New York's going to kill her.
Well, I mean, that's what she wants. Who knows? Yeah, to each her own. Now, what did this doctor do that the others aren't doing?
I don't know what. Voodoo.
He took out the poisons. He took them out with homeopathics. He took them out with herbals. He sent it to a dentist because, ladies and gentlemen out there, our dentists in America are poisoning you.
That's why I never go.
They put mercury or quicksilver in your mouth. They call them, it's a beautiful name, listen to this, silver fillings.
That's not really silver?
It's a misnomer, gentlemen.
It's not silver.
It is 50% mercury. And we have proof.
And so that's why you should get gold fillings, right?
No.
No?
I would use enamel and plastics and ceramics. I wouldn't use any metal.
So what kind of filling should you get?
Enamel, plastics. But I would not use, I mean, don't put these in your kids, ladies and gentlemen.
I asked my doctor for chocolate fillings, and she wouldn't give them to me.
Well, because you don't have a sweet tooth. You like beer.
So don't get gold or silver fillings. Go for the plastic or enamel.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you what's going on with dentistry.
What's going on with
dentistry? Dentistry plays an enormous role in degenerative disease. Now, we have a chapter in a book, Alternative Medicine, The Definitive Guide. That's the name of it. It was written by 380 of the world's leading physicians.
Who's the number one?
Huh?
Who's number one? If there's 380 of them, who's the best one?
They're a dead heap. They're a dead heap. See, they all have different talents. And the wonderful thing about alternative medicine...
Now, how's this book going over in the mainstream medical community? I mean, are regular, everyday neighborhood doctors picking up this book?
I think they're throwing up.
They're afraid it's going to put them out of business.
Well, you know, in 1990, one-third, 34% of the United States population, according to a New England Journal of Medicine study, used some form of alternative medicine. One-third! And you know what?
What?
The money came out of their own pockets, basically, because insurance companies don't cover it. Why?
Why?
Because the doctors are advisors to them, and the doctors are ignorant of the value of alternative medicine. Now, don't get me wrong. We're not knocking all alternative, all mainstream medicine. We're only knocking the degenerative aspect. The emergency room is fabulous. Remember that.
Is there any place in your book where it says laughter is the best medicine?
Oh, it's a wonderful. Hey, every bad thought is toxic, and laughter's wonderful.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Do you have any snoo?
Pardon?
Do you have any snoo in your hotel room there?
Snow.
No, snoo.
What's that mean?
What's what?
Snoo. What's snoo?
Not much. What's snoo with you?
How's the world treating you? That's Gershwin, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I just was a doctor. I just performed an operation on you.
You actually made me laugh.
What does...
You did you said the magic word.
He's a quack. Okay, what does homeopathic medicine mean?
Wait, you see my bill.
What does homeopathy mean? Or how?
Homeopathy.
Okay,
homeopathy. It's been practiced in this country for about 150 years, 125 years. In Germany, a guy by the name of Hahnemann started this 200 years ago.
Oh,
and
the brewer?
Is,
did he also make beer?
Heilemann?
Yeah,
is it Yeah, Hahnemann.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
As a matter of fact, we had a college in Philadelphia, the Hahnemann College. It used to be a homeopathic college.
Okay.
But then mainstream medicine took over and squeezed them and squashed them. But it's coming back in droves. You know, there's a product on the drugstore shelf for colds and flu called Ossococcosicillium.
Wow.
It's made.
Say that three times real fast.
They sell $50 million a year of this one product. And it knocks out, in many cases, you know, it depends on where you find it, what you do. But it really helps cold and flu. Amazing. Echinacea, golden seal, herbs, many roots to Rome, many roads to Rome. And we don't have all the answers, but we have some of them. And what the book is about is options. You've got options out there. So when it comes to cancer, we feel that the National Cancer Institute is a total failure. $2 billion a year. Dr. Speckhardt, the entire bill of Stacey Milgram for her cancer, $4,000, and her cancer is gone. These clowns down in Washington and in the research all over this country looking to cure cancer, I wouldn't even talk to Dr. Speckhardt and the 7 or 8 or 10 or 12. Now remember, folks, not everybody and not every doctor in alternative medicine can cure cancer. I'm just telling you about the leading edge, and we cover them in our book. There are doctors that do that in other countries, like you maybe have 10 or 15 of them that are courageous enough to attack it. We got Nick Gonzalez in New York City.
Dr. Nick.
Dr. Nick is brilliant. He uses enzymes and detoxification and diet. He doesn't use. We have a guy Brzezinski in Houston, Texas, and we have stories. We tell you the people who have gone through them. So there's many ways to do it, but the most important thing to know if you've got a bad problem is empower yourself with the options that are available. Know that there are non-toxic approaches that will. You know what chemotherapy and radiation does?
It makes you sick.
You better believe it.
It eats out your innards.
They kill the cancer and hope you survive.
So if you're sick, if you're ill and with something, should you go to the doctor and do what he says and then also do some of these alternative medicines, or are you just saying screw the family doctor unless it's an emergency?
Let me tell you what I will do. I'm not going to tell people what to do. I tell people about options.
Let's say, okay,
if I had cancer or arthritis or back pain or headaches, I would go to alternative medicine because it works. I mean, forget it. It works. I've seen it. I have chapter and verses on it. I was, I came into this 20 years ago when my friend's daughter slit her wrist.
Ow!
She was depressed. She was schizo. She was being talked to death by a psychiatrist.
She just needed to hear some bad jokes.
Yeah, it was real sad. And when a holistic physician treated her with diet and nutrient supplements and she got well, we were flabbergasted. We were amazed. And
okay, so we're talking real treatments. We're not talking some kind of. Are we talking chiropractors? Are we talking dangling some kind of crystal pyramid over somebody?
Don't demean chiropractors, because they have some of the answers. Do you know that every one of your organs are attached to nerves that are attached to the spine? And so chiropractors have good work. Some of them do nutrition. Some of them do a lot of this medicine.
Some of them are quacks, though.
Look.
Some of the regular
look,
quacks
look,
are more
okay,
you
go,
what,
look,
I mean, some of them are like, we're not talking like crystal power and zodiac signs and that kind of weirdness, are we?
We're talking about New Age stuff. We're talking about. I went to these 380 physicians. I said, gentlemen, tell me how you would successfully treat 208 of the worst health conditions. Bedwetting, hangover, pre-operation bottles, headaches.
Syphilis.
Absolutely.
Gonorrhea.
We have a chapter on sexual diseases.
Spinal meningitis.
What about AIDS? Do you have a cure for AIDS yet?
Yes, sir.
What is it?
Now, when you talk about cure, we have a chapter on AIDS, and we tell you that AIDS is reversible using natural therapies. This country could save billions of dollars turning to the doctors who successfully treat alternative medicine. I just did another book on AIDS. It's called You Don't Have to Die,
yeah.
Unraveling the AIDS Myth. And we tell you about safe therapies in alternative medicine that will reverse the symptoms from being serious to being asymptomatic, without symptoms. And the people go back to work. That's with the diarrhea and the cancers and the pneumonias and everything else. Read this book, gentlemen. This book has answers you won't believe. Now, the pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know about this.
Okay, now if one of our listeners wants to call the 800 number now, let's give it out.
So go grab your pencils and papers later.
He also has the magazine.
Yeah, you're going to give away a free newsletter too?
Yeah, I'm going to give away a free newsletter. Get your pencil and paper.
You wouldn't give one of our listeners a free book, would you?
No, well...
They go broke. These things cost them...
Yeah, I mean, the book is very expensive for giveaways. But I'll tell you this, it's less than the cost of a trip to a doctor.
Good point. My new car is less than a trip to the doctor.
What about tetanus? Can you treat tetanus, or do you need to get a tetanus shot?
I think, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not a doctor, you know. I'm... Answer. I'm 68 years old. My sister's 2 years younger than I died of cancer. My father died of a heart attack, and I'm fed up. I mean, isn't enough enough already? We're sitting on our haunches. We're accepting this verdict of cancer. It's epidemic in this country. Do you know the American Medical Association in January of 1994 did a study on men over 55?
Mm-hmm.
Cancer from 73 to 84,
mm-hmm.
87, 14 years, went up 12%. Now, how long are we going to have to take this before we wake up? There are treatments out there that are non-toxic and effective, and we have to do research in that line. That's what the purpose of this book is.
Now, why is there so much cancer now? Is it because our diet has changed, or because our environment has changed?
Well, I just told you, when they went to the toxicologist, they found arsenic, chlordane, and DDT.
So it's our environment has changed.
We are taking in poisons in our food, air, and water. Soda pop is really bad for women. I mean, it has bubbles and it has phosphate, and that knocks out the calcium in their bones.
Bubbles.
Do you know we cover PMS and osteoporosis? And women who are in their 40s come into menopause with 25 to 30% of their bone density depleted. And so they have to do things. And we have treatments like a natural progesterone cream over the counter, inexpensive, instead of estrogens. Dr. Lee, my expert, a Harvard-educated doctor in California, working with women for 30 years, he's my expert, and I have many experts on it, but in this particular one, a progesterone cream, it mediates, he says that most women are excessive in estrogen, that they're deficient in natural progesterone. These are not drugs. These are what they make the drugs from. It's a yam out of Mexico, and it's in a form of a cream, so it doesn't have to go through your digestive tract and get... dissipated.
Okay.
And it's terribly effective.
Look, Burton, we promised your publicist we'd let you give out that number, so let's not let her down.
All right, if you want a free issue of my magazine that comes out every other month, and we hope you like it, write Digest, Box K.
Box K?
K is in Circle K.
Milton, M-I-L-T-O-N, Washington, W-A, 98354.
What was that?
Milton, Washington, 98354. And I'll send you this wonderful digest. It's a magazine that tells you a lot of how-tos, take care of this and take care of that. You'll find it interesting. If you're interested in alternative medicine of any kind, you'll find this to be very useful. And then if you want information on the book or want to buy the book, you can go to the bookstores, health food stores. But yeah, we have an 800 number. And I did another book called The Yellow Pages of Alternative Medicine.
I don't think there is.
Wow. You're just a writing theme these days, aren't you?
Aren't you the home of Henry Heimlich?
You bet.
He is a wonderful soul.
His kid's a fascist punk, though.
That's right. He's got a kid on city council who is a fascist punk.
Oh. His wife is fabulous.
Oh.
She's
very much, and she has a newsletter, and she does great work in alternative medicine. She's fabulous.
Well, just remember, next time you speak with the Heimlichs, tell them that Chris and Rob called their son a fascist punk. Can we pass that along for us?
You guys are trips.
Hey, Burton, who's your favorite TV doctor? Mine is Bones from Star Trek.
I don't really watch TV.
What do you think
much.
Of Bones' medicine? Do you think it's good medicine?
Where they zap you?
They zap you and stuff.
You know, we have that already. We have devices, lights that will heal. We have magnetic energy that will heal. We have ozone that will heal. We have a product. If you have a cold and flu coming on,
mm-hmm.
the doctor gives you an IV of hydrogen peroxide, a
mm-hmm.
medical grade. You don't take it orally.
Right.
It can be done intravenously. Knock it out. If you have an infection of any kind, knock it out without antibiotics. Inexpensive. $9 will treat 50 people.
Hasn't it just came out recently that American doctors have been prescribing antibiotics way too often, and so as we get older, or when we really need an antibiotic, we have built up an immunity to antibiotics.
You're absolutely
correct.
British
physicians were horrified at the amount of antibiotics American physicians prescribed.
Not only what we prescribe, we give more antibiotic poundage to animals than to humans. And when we eat the animal, guess what? We get it. Now, here's why antibiotics are bad. I mean, they're wonderful. I mean, we used to lose 50% of our pneumonia patients. We were a society of infectious diseases. We ain't anymore. We learn how to clean our water, how to put screens on, hygiene, and we also have antibiotics.
Okay, we got to wrap this up here in a second, Doc. We got to get to the news.
Hey, Doc, do you have a cure for flatulence I can pass on to my co-host?
Yeah, it's right in the book. But if
we'll
you
look
want
it
the
up.
Book, it's 800-517-HEAL, H-E-A-L.
What, 800 what?
517-HEAL. And if you have flatulence, you'll find the answers in this book, Bedwetting.
And the name of the book is Alternative Medicine, The Definitive Guide.
You got it.
Okay, thanks, Burton.
God bless you guys and everybody in Cincinnati.
Phone number here is 749-1444. That's 749-1444. We're finally taking your calls. Rob and I are good for what ails you, so if you got a problem, call us up. We'll look it up in this book, or maybe we'll just prescribe our own cure, because Rob and I are good at that sort of thing. 749-1444. 749-1444. We'll be right back.